World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Indeed, powered by the SID Media. We are joined on the line by Dolly, who is going to be talking to us in a short bit, talking about inclusive leadership. Good afternoon to you, Dolly. I hope you've been good.
I'm very good. I'm excited to be here again. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much, Dolly. Now, in today's interconnected world, organizations are recognizing the importance of inclusive leadership. Inclusive leaders foster a work environment where all employees feel valued, respected, and empowered to contribute their unique perspectives and talents. Now, this approach not only enhances employee satisfaction and engagement, but also drives innovation and organizational success. Now, how would you define, in your understanding, inclusive leadership?
Yeah, I think you make a valid point in your intro, just around organizations now being very awakened to the realities that there's no magic wand to delivering business results. And so they need to put the people agenda at the forefront.
Yeah.
And so they're realizing that actually you need leaders who are impactful and inspiring, who understand what inclusive leadership actually looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So inclusive leaders are those that obviously, you know, create an environment where people are able to thrive, they feel seen, they feel heard, and they can, be productive up, you know, to their optimal levels, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And these are leaders who are very courageous, by the way,
yep,
that trying to eradicate any, you know, forms of unfairness,
mm-hmm,
and inequality, mm-hmm, in an environment to make sure that every single person, irrespective of race, feels like they're included. And they're very intentional, very committed to creating and fostering those environments where every single person's voice matters, where people can ideate and essentially be innovative,
yeah,
in those organizational structures.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I do think that organizations are leveraging quite a lot in terms of the inclusive leadership commodity, I'd call it as that, because,
yeah,
I do think it's the strategic lever for organizations to win beyond strategy, beyond vision,
yeah,
beyond business performance.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. Now, what do you see as the biggest challenge for diversity, equity, and inclusion? This is initiatives that we would have in today's world.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I think as much as we are making good strides, I think, in terms of advancing the DEI agenda in South Africa,
mm-hmm,
I do think that sometimes we fall prey to making, you know, just making sure that these initiatives are events rather than sustainable approaches, essentially, right,
mm-hmm,
that will completely eradicate unfairness and inequality in these different environments. So it's almost like a bandage approach where we're stitching initiatives for the now and,
yeah,
not for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that we need a future lens that says, what does equality look like for all? What does access for all look like? What does opportunity for all actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
mm-hmm,
that's the biggest challenge we actually face.
Mm-hmm.
But also beyond, mm-hmm, that, and I think a burden that I carry are probably the slow levels of transformation in South Africa.
Yeah.
As you know, we do have, policy reforms through employment equity structures, for instance, to basically make sure that there's balanced representation across organizations.
Mm.
But because of a number of reasons, whether that's policy that's not enacted and implemented or resistance, we're seeing slow levels of transformation and movement in organizations, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
And I think that's a major challenge that is still prevalent in South Africa. And I think that we need to get to conversations that hold leaders accountable,
yeah,
I suppose, which is another, mm-hmm, challenge, you know, mm-hmm, to say, have we really held people accountable for not adhering to these policy reforms that will advance equality in our country?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful,
yeah,
stuff, man.
And it, yeah.
Please go ahead.
Oh, sorry to cut you off. Yeah, I also wanted to add, I think when we think about where organizations are at the moment, human-centric leadership is also quite a big thing.
Mm.
And so leaders can't then lead human-centrically with biases.
Mm.
And so these biases get in the way, right? And they're quite harmful sometimes in terms of decision-making.
Yeah.
And so that's another challenge where leaders will lead with automatic judgments, will lead stereotypically, will lead with preconceived notions and assumptions in terms of the decisions that they make day-to-day. And these tend to, you know, serve as very harmful to employee experiences,
yeah,
and the communities that they're actually operating in as well. So the key question we need to continue to ask is, how do we empower leaders to continue to interrupt these biases so that the teams are, you know, collaborative and there's team effectiveness?
True. Now, how should leaders then identify and address unconscious biases in individuals as well as team decision making?
I want to categorically firstly state that all of us have biases, by the way, right? And so sometimes when we tell leaders that they've got biases, they're like, oh my goodness, why are you accusing me of being biased? Essentially, we're all biased because we have been indoctrinated to certain beliefs from a young age, from family, from society. So if I say to you pink, you think female. If I say blue, you think male. If I say policeman, you think the male gender spectrum. And so these are indoctrinations that all of us have. And so leaders too are not immune to these indoctrinations. But what the problem is that they take them into an organization. And if they're not aware of these, they become harmful to other people that are actually around them. The first part for me is creating awareness and being aware of these kind of biases that we're talking about, because you can't interrupt what you actually don't know. So how do we then empower leaders to be able to be conscious of what they're unconscious of in terms of biases, first of all, and then they can begin to interrupt these biases, because they can be significantly harmful and derogatory at times to those that are actually around them. And to your point, they hinder decision making, and so there's no team effectiveness then, because they led, you know, with these kind of biases as well. So the first point of call is really just to be aware and to be empowered and educated around the different kinds of biases and how they manifest themselves on a day-to-day basis.
Man, in fact, you know, as you're saying that all of us have got bias, I was thinking, but actually it's true. And so we've got to just be aware and be quite in tune with that, that it is a fact. And I think it's a good thing. Thank you for that, because I actually wasn't thinking about that consciously. Now, what is a healthy approach then to recruiting candidates from underrepresented groups?
Yeah, it's a very important question. And I wish we had more time to discuss these biases, because it's such a crucial conversation. But going back to the now, I mean, I think about making sure that your talent acquisition processes are actually fair. I think for me, that's where, you know, we begin. I also want to mention that there's a lot of talk around eradicating diversity targets within organizations. But the other question I ask then, if there is this narrative that we need to do away with these diversity targets, what then happens to underrepresented groups? What happens in institutions where there's still significant imbalances and underrepresentation in those structures? So I dare to even say that diversity targets are still very much necessary in a country and in societies that are actually not transformed. That's the first thing for me. I also think, when we look at hiring practices, for instance, sometimes leaders then hire with these biases. And I want to give you one very quickly. And one of these that impede the effective appointment of underrepresented groups is what we call affinity bias. Affinity bias is where hiring manager hires people that look like them, sound like them, went to the same school as them, we come from the same neighborhood. So I've got an affinity to you. I've got relatability to you. And therefore, by virtue of that, I am going to appoint you. And what this does is that it then advances what we call assumed competence. You're not appointing a person because of competence, you're appointing them because of affinity. And what this does is that it excludes a certain population or group of people from being included in those hiring practices. And so I think that leaders or hiring managers need to be very aware that affinity bias is very, very harmful, because if we continue to hire the way that we are and excluding underrepresented groups, we are perpetuating inequality in corporate structures and institutions, which obviously then has a ripple effect societally and in the communities, because then it perpetuates high levels of unemployment of underrepresented groups.
Now, tell me though, from the other end, Dolly, yes, I know that you are saying that affinity bias could be harmful, but a person then could argue and say, well, as a manager, I would relate very easily and quickly with this type of a person, because they are my direct report, and I would, if I say things in a particular way, they would not take particular offense, because they know how we talk, etc., etc., and so it becomes for me an issue of productivity more than just trying to meet some quotas.
Correct. You make a very valid point. First of all, I think it's very important that we make sure that when we hire people, we look at all things encompassing. Mm-hmm. So we actually look at whether the person is competent or not. We look at all of the competencies of a person and not just one thing. Mm-hmm. So if I'm then going to hire a person that has got an affinity to me, in principle, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with it. Right. But also what we need to be mindful of is that as we perpetuate this, we're excluding other people who've got potential mm-hmm. and are talented, who can come into the space, who think differently from what we do, who can critically think, right, and really challenge some of the decisions. Yep. And that's what you want, right? You want diverse perspectives in a team, people that are going to think differently from what you do mm-hmm. to cultivate this innovation that we're talking about. You don't want to build teams that are homogenous, people that think like you, ideate like you, because there's no critical thinking in there. True. And so that's where affinity becomes very harmful then, because you're assuming that this person will think like you, ideate like you, and therefore they'll be competent. Mm. But is that really, really, you know, good for productivity? And for critical thinking and problem solving, maybe not necessarily.
Yeah, I think that's you're making a good point there. And what strategies then would you say foster collaboration among team members with diverse backgrounds?
I think trust is a very, very big thing. And I really, really want us to talk about psychological safety in an environment. So when people don't feel safe and they feel like they can't make mistakes because they're going to be punished, that is not going to enhance collaboration, because if I make one mistake, I'm going to be I'm punished. And then the second thing is just around if people are in an environment where they can't challenge the status quo, where they can't challenge the current processes for improvement, there's no collaboration there. Also, if people can't contribute or put their hand up to be able to contribute to certain assignments or special projects, that goes, you know, against the grain of collaboration. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that there's a level of psychological safety in a team where people can fully express themselves to be able to ideate and to craft innovation in a team. The other critical thing that you want to make sure is that there are diverse perspectives in the team and that these diverse perspectives are actually heard. That fosters collaboration, that irrespective of my race, my gender, I'm seen, I'm heard, I'm valued, I'm taken into account into this team. Mm-hmm. That fosters team effectiveness, that fosters team collaboration. I think more than anything else, for me, it's just to be very emphatic on building trust in the team and psychological safety so that everybody feels like they belong and they can thrive in this environment. Mm.
Lastly, before I let you go, Dolly, we've had particular groups of people saying that, it's got to be sunset in as far as, you know, affirmative action is concerned, because I mean the playing grounds are now level and everybody's now have access to education, access to schools, access to funding for everybody, and this thing is just derailing progress. I mean, you hear this talk in sports, for instance, you hear this talk in other creative environments. What do we say to this? Are we truly level now?
It's a very important question you're asking. You know, earlier on, I alluded to the slow rate of transformation in our country. I mean, that on its own tells you that we're not there yet. Mm. And the first thing I want to say is that the work that we do around DEI is a marathon and not a sprint. It's going to take us some time. Uh-huh. You know, when we look at the number of females that are represented in organizational institutions, they're still significantly underrepresented, especially in leadership positions. Mm-hmm. When we look at the continued marginalization of people with disabilities in organizations, it tells you we still have a lot of work to do. When we look at the amount of people from underrepresented groups that are represented in executive positions, it tells you that we still have a lot of work to do. When you look at, you know, income differentials and the perpetual income anomalies, especially from people from underrepresented groups, it tells you that we still have a long way to go. Yep. And therefore, there is still some strides that we need to make. We are not there yet, right? And I think for me, the question is not whether we're there yet. It's about how do we evaluate the current initiatives to make sure that they stick, to make sure that they're actually impactful? That's the question I would actually rather ask. And so DEI continues to be necessary. And I think people need to probably divorce themselves from thinking that there's an arrival mentality when it comes to this work. It's certainly a marathon rather than a sprint.
Beautiful. And I like that it's a marathon, but not a sprint. And so it's going to take time because, as others would say, guys, we've been 3 decades in it already. But hey, but remember, let's all remember that it is a marathon and not a sprint. Notwithstanding that it's been 3 decades, yes. But I think that there has been some resistance in some quarters. Hence, we still 3 decades on not having arrived and at where we're supposed to be.
Yeah. Absolutely, 100%. I love this conversation. We could have it the whole day. I could add some more.
Man.
But I know that we're under time constraints. But absolutely. I mean, South Africa is on a journey, and and it's going to take us some time. We have made strides here and there. But the resistance bit, I think, for me is a big thing. And if I had time, I would even expand that to say the reason, partly the reason for this resistance is because we see DEI as race and gender in terms of those primary dimensions. But DEI goes beyond that.
Yeah.
DEI should answer the question, actually. Notwithstanding that, you may argue that there's access. Access does not equal to quality. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. Because you may give me access, but is, you know, are you giving me resources that I need, particularly for me as a unique individual? You know, because our experiences are not the same.
Yep.
And so there's a difference between equity and equality. And the next time we have time, I'll expand on that, hopefully. Because these are important conversations.
Well, Dolly Ngonje, ngosi kakhulu for joining us this afternoon, and wishing you a fantastic day further.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Always lovely to be here. Thank you so, so much.
Lovely. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.